You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Tuesday, 20 August, Nepi Rockcastle results due later today. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Carmen Mapuani. MTN results. I mean, it seems to all just be around the Naira. We'll get her take on that. Cookie Koyman from Denker Capital on the Absa CEO revolving door. And then Justin Esthorpe. He's from Uber Group. We're getting rate cuts since September. Touch lots of wood when I say that. Should that be beneficial to our residential property market? The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb, still sticking the landing. Most of Fed's interest rate hiking cycles since the Second World War have ended in hard landings, not soft. Business Day, Tiger Brands Fixer Genius or Hype, CEO of strategy of reaching 130,000 informal and independent township stores is steaming ahead. Morning markets, the US was green, S&P up 1%, NASDAQ 1.3% higher. The East is mostly red, we've got Sydney down 0.2%. Tokyo up 1.7%, Hong Kong down 0.2%, and Tencent down 0.4%. Commodities also mostly red. Gold, $2,539 an ounce. Brent, $77.16. Platinum is green at $9.66, and palladium, $9.14. Rand, $17.74. Bitcoin, $60,600. Top 40 opening call, 141 points to the up. That's about 0.2% green open.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Turning now with Carmen Mapuani, independent analyst. Carmen, appreciate the early morning time. The MTN results. I mean, we'd seen the trading updates. We'd seen the numbers from Ghana, from Nigeria, and other markets. They report, they tell us the constant currency, which looks not bad at all. Of course, that's not the actual reality. It is about the Naira devaluation. 288 million customers, 18 markets. I mean, is this just a good set of numbers blighted by the Naira devaluation, or was there more to it?
It is so nuanced, but I think to start off the bat, if we, like you said, look at the constant currency basis, etc., look at what's happened with EBITDA strengthening, it's a solid set of numbers. However, once again, the Naira and Nigeria have obviously overtaken in terms of the performance. Mm. The Naira is down over 70% since the newly elected, well, no longer newly elected, but the president was elected last year, May. So we've seen a significant decline there. You look at the inflation there, that is up over 20%. Very concerning. I've been trying to look at what the outlook for the Naira is, but you know, Simon, how these currencies work, how long is this string, et cetera. But if you go down into the detail, you just drill down a bit, I think that, in terms of what's been done and the steps, we've spoken about this before, focusing on the towers in Nigeria and renegotiating that contract to assist them on that side in Nigeria on the equity, the negative equity. But then back home, when we talk about Nigeria, MTN, we focus on, for example, fintech prospects, which I think in the long term may serve them well, but still very, very small part of total sales revenue, only hitting about 4.1%. So not really moving the radar as it stands. But as you said, as much as MTN share prices suffered over the last year or so, on the back of yesterday's results, it was actually up 1.84. So I think a lot of the pain has already been priced in.
Yeah, and that's the point. And the horror trading update, what was it, last week before, I forget, the stock was up 10% on really bad news. You mentioned the fintech, and that is really what, in a sense, mobile data voice has now become sort of utility. Fintech is the future. Of course, Vodacom's got the M-Pesa in East Africa, which perhaps is stronger. I mean, I suppose the argument is that there can be more than just two fintech players across the continent coming out of the mobile space.
No, definitely, especially, the completely different markets at this point that they operate in, or the big markets that are completely separate. I think that they are within their bound, not the bounds, within their experience to actually pursue that. If they didn't pursue it, I think it would be a huge problem, in terms of how the market would perceive it. But so I definitely agree with you that this is a place they need to continue drilling in, but it may take a bit of time to actually get that, impact or the significant impact from fintech in the numbers.
Yeah, I take your point. And the numbers are coming through. I mean, maybe it's a long way to go, but certainly they are coming through. We'll leave it there. Cameron Mepuani, independent analyst. Appreciate the early morning time.
There's no postponing the inevitable. Your money knew this day would come. And you know what? It can hardly wait to start giving some back to you. When you invest in STANLIB's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. STANLIB is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Same with Cookie Coinman from Denker Capital. Cookie, appreciate the time today. News that Absa CEO Ari Reitenbach will be leaving. Some background to it. I mean, Rio Ramos retired in 2019 from Absa after a decade. We've got Sim Shabalala, who's been at Standard Bank a decade. David Brown was at Nedbank for 14 years. Jason Quinn is the new CEO there. Of course, he's from Absa. I suppose two questions. What's the problem with Absa CEO hot seat, and how concerned should shareholders be?
Yeah, I think shareholders should be concerned. So that's an easy one, but let's see why. And I'd just like to go back almost 10 years or 8 years when Barclays was still Absa's controlling shareholder. And that did a lot of damage to Absa in terms of on everything, on processes, on internal development of leadership. And so when Barclays exited, the team had a huge task of first getting out of writing their own systems, et cetera. And that took a lot of time under the leadership then of Maria Ramos. During that time, Absa lost a lot of market share. And this is where the problem starts. There was an internal team under Ari Reitenbach and also Jason Quinn who did a lot of work and came up with a plan as to arrest the market share and turn it around. And that was well received and was implemented. And in fact, they did start taking market share, but some of it was obviously in the lower end of the market, which was higher risk. Okay, fast forward. Then Maria Ramos steps down and Absa appoints Daniel Mminele, ex-Reserve Bank governor. And 6 months later, Daniel wanted to change the direction of the bank and the way of managing the executives and where the bank was going to go to.
That's right.
And the team then, under Ari and Jason, actually, just revolted against that. They said, we can't have this. We're halfway into the strategy. This is what we've decided on. And basically, and this is obviously external to what Tom hears, but basically said to the board, we can't have this. Either Daniel Mminele leaves or we leave. Not sure if it was actually worded exactly that way, but the effect of it was that Daniel Mminele had to leave. And it seems now, again, mosaic theory, but it seems now that obviously internally in Absa that created divisions and against Daniel Mminele. And that subsequently has led to, I think, a lot of arguments against Ari. I'm not sure of that. It is interesting, even going back, and I had interviews with Wendy Lucas-Bull, and I actually went back and read my notes, where at that stage, really post-Barclays, there were a lot of divisions in the team in terms of direction. And she said quite correctly, we've got to end the divisions. We've got to unify and go forward. And so sadly, coming back to shareholders, it seems again there's divisions at the top level. And now you've had Jason Quinn, who was would have been the natural successor to Ari leaving. And look, I can only, from what I read in the newspapers and so, it seems Ari did make some decisions which seem naive or silly in terms of Kovac Fox, the guy they sent to the US to work from there.
That's right.
And so that raised amongst staff members corporate governance concerns. I think the way I got to know Ari and everything he did, I was attracted to the way he tried to manage the bank and trying to get a team spirit going, trying to get the divisions running autonomously and him just being a leader rather than being totally in charge. So from my point of view, I think it's sad that he goes, but obviously there were things that created so much division internally that it seems from the note that was sent out that he himself felt it's better for the bank if he steps down, that if he's a dividing figure, then he will step down. Where does it leave the bank? Charles Rousson, who's taking over, so has got a very good long-term track record, but as CIB CEO, so you know, retail is very important. Has he got those skills? Punky Modise is there. She's filled a few roles, also as CFO. So they are capable people. But the sad news for Absa is I'm sure the board will now first have to go and do a search again. And that takes time. You've got to appoint agencies to go and do the search. You want an external search, an internal search. Great uncertainty, say, oh, it's not good for shareholders.
And I mean, listening to you there, it's divisions amongst top leadership, often around strategy, but also means that no strategy is really getting implemented. And even now, for the acting CEO, he can't really do anything because he's going to have a new boss. Maybe he gets the job,
correct.
He's not sure.
Yeah, so he'll basically just try and keep the desk clean and his hands are effectively tied behind his back where there are important decisions maybe to be made. It's going to be very difficult for him to make them. So it's a pity because a lot of the things that happen, also the increased bad debts, came from that decision of absolute try and gain lost market share. When they started that, one didn't know we were going to have COVID. So post-COVID, then bad debts did increase. Now, Ari is being blamed for that. I'm not sure. Yeah, so the bad debts look artificial. Again, Ari made the right decision, in my opinion, recently to say, okay, we onboarded those clients. We gained that market share. Now we're going to stick for that market share. Yeah, we're not going to now turn around and say we. And so I think he made the right decision. But a lot of those decisions, if you're against him, you can say, oh, you shouldn't have done that. You shouldn't have done that. And it seems like internally there's division almost. There seems to be also division in terms of his appointments, whether they were BEE enough or not. And, you know, it depends on which color hat do you want. Do you want the best people, meritocracy, or do you want, you know, the right BEE candidates? And that seemed to also, sadly, it means there are problems inside APSA. And I'm actually surprised the share price went up today. Maybe investors are saying, okay, you know, this is the end of the division. I'm not sure either.
Cookie Kuman, Denker Capital, always appreciate the insights.
Hear that? Nothing. Your money can do more when it blocks out the noise, as hard as it is these days. When you invest in the Stanley Balanced Cautious Fund, we manage the risks so that you can see stable inflation-beating returns through market cycles. Invest with more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Joining now with Justin Eathorpe, he's a provincial sales manager at Uber Group. Justin, appreciate the early morning time. Widely expected we're going to get a rate cut in September. I was going to say 0.25%, but sure, maybe it could be 0.5%. We're not sure. It's small and might not happen, but I mean, this should help a residential market, I suppose slowly, but I mean, it can only be good news for the residential property market, I would imagine.
Yes, good morning, and thank you for having me on your show. Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think the rate cut is certainly expected. We're hoping to expect, and yes, while we may not see a huge jump in the activity in the property market, it certainly does give the consumer that confidence that, you know, we've reached the height of our interest rate cycle, and we should now start seeing the interest rate coming down, whether it be 25 basis points next month or 50 basis points. I think the trend of the reduction in interest rates is certainly going to help.
Yeah, and I suppose it's around confidence. And as you say, I mean, maybe it's only 0.25%, but if we roll out to, I don't know, end of next year, it could be 1%, maybe even 1.5% lower. It gives confidence. It also gives a little bit more sort of purchasing power. The one point in a recent note out from you and your colleagues is that bank approvals have been pretty steady. I mean, kudos to banks. They haven't run for the hills, however. They have been out there still lending.
Absolutely, and you know the competition is getting more and more. The banks need to compete against each other to ensure that they maintain their home loan book, and we're also seeing other competitors coming into the market as well. So our big commercial banks need to ensure that they're on top of their game, and really the only way that they can do that is to ensure that they're giving attractive interest rates, giving loan amounts required that the purchaser requires in the quickest possible time.
You in the note that came out, first time home buyers, 46% of the base in your last data. That was for Q2 of this year. That is down. I imagine that should also pick up because, I mean, coming into the home market the first time is difficult because you don't have that first property to use as a, you know, the equity in that. That should also significantly help, notwithstanding banks have been lending.
Absolutely, and what we did see in the lows of the 7% post COVID was that our first time home buyers peaked to around 56%. We've seen a drop off on that because purely based on the fact that I think the first time home buyers are more rate sensitive. They're waiting to see what the interest rate does. And you know, in a lower interest rate cycle or a downward interest rate cycle, we're going to hopefully see more first time home buyers and as well seeing first time home buyers investing in property rather than buying property for their own personal use as well.
I want to touch on that investment property in a moment. Before we get to that, you also, in terms of ages, sort of the buyers, the 18 to 36, have seen increased purchasing power. The 37 pluses, which is, I suppose, the older folks within reason, they've been buying cheaper properties than they were a year ago. Is that just, I suppose, you know, perhaps being cautious? I mean, could we expect that to potentially tweak as well? Because, you know, a rate cut means for the same monthly repayment, I can spend a little bit more.
Absolutely, and I think the strain on the consumer, and in particular that in that age group, just with the average living expenses going up, they're more cautious in their approach, and reaching times and thinking about times of saving. So as we see the reduction in interest rate, thus the reduction in the bond repayment, giving them more surplus income to be able to spend on bigger properties as well. We certainly will see a tweak, hopefully now backwards because it forwards because it did go backwards year on year.
Investment properties, you mentioned that. I mean, and investment properties, and it, I got to be honest, it surprised me, but it's continued. You make the point; it's actually continued to have strong demand.
Absolutely, and the investor, I think, and the investor and the consumer in South Africa has realized that investing in property is a great return. Mm-hmm. One thing that a purchaser or a consumer always needs to bear in mind is that when purchasing a property, it's not a short-term view. It's a long-term view, it's a long-term goal, and that is where our consumers are sitting at the moment, realizing that it is a good investment opportunity at the moment. We're not seeing people sending their money offshore as much as we did. Mm-hmm. We are seeing people investing more in South Africa, and property is the way to go. Property is your long-term goal to sustain future income.
You make that point there around, you know, less money heading off into the dollars and the euros and the like, more staying local. I imagine we've got a double wind at our back here. We've got the election from late May, the Government of National Unity, which so far is so good. There's actually a fair bit of wind at the back for residential property beyond just rate cuts.
Absolutely, and hopefully we, you know, there is quite a bit of stock in the property sector. We are seeing that more and more listings are coming on, and I think the sellers are certainly getting prepared for the imminent arrival of these buyers when they see that they can afford the property that they want.
We'll leave it there, Justin Eastall, Provincial Sales Manager at the Uber Group. Appreciate the early morning time. And that's our question today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Are you considering buying a home as the rates start to come lower? Certainly, it gives you a little bit more spending power or perhaps less pressure on your budget, depending which way you want to slice that spending. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. That's it for today. I was chatting with Nick Kunze yesterday about Standard Bank. Costs, impairments, both coming down. That frankly surprised me. We asked you if there was still value in the banks. Nick said, look, they've run, but you know, Standard Bank's still a PE of under 10, dividend yield of around 6, and a price to book of only 1.5. Over half of you said, yep, there's value, but selectively. A quarter was saying they are definitely cheap. Rest said, nope, there is pain ahead. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokhle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Avenge results.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.